Maledict knocked softly on the barracks door. It opened a fraction, and then all the way. Carborundum lowered his club. Wordlessly, Polly and Maledict dragged the two cavalrymen inside. Sergeant Jackram was sitting on a stool by the fire, drinking a mug of beer.
"Well done, lads," he said. "Put 'em with the others."
He waved the mug vaguely toward the far wall, where four of the soldiers cowered under the gaze of Tonka. They had been manacled together. The last soldier was lying on a table, with Igor at work on him with a needle and thread.
"How's he coming along, Private?" said Jackram.
"He'll be fine, Sarge," said Igor. "It looked worse than it was, really. Just as well, because until we get to the battlefield, I won't get any spares."
"Got a couple of legs for all three parts?" said Jackram.
"Now then, Sarge, none of that," said Scallet evenly.
He was sitting on the other side of the fireplace.
"You just leave me their horses and saddles. Your lads could do with their sabres, I've no doubt."
"They were looking for us, Sarge," said Polly. "We're just a bunch of untrained recruits, and they were looking for us. I could have been killed, Sarge."
"No, I know talent when I sees it," said Jackram. "Well done, lad. Had to piss off myself on account of a big man in full enemy uniform isn't easy to miss. Besides, you lads needed to be woke up. That's military thinking, that is."
"But if I hadn't," Polly hesitated, "if I hadn't tricked them, they might have killed the lieutenant."
"See, there's always a positive side any way you look at it," said Scallet.
The sergeant stood up, wiped his mouth on the back of his hand, and hitched up his belt. He ambled over to the captain, reached down, and lifted him up by his jacket.
"Why were you looking for these boys, sir?" he inquired.
The captain opened his eye and focused on the fat man.
"I am an officer and a gentleman, sergeant," he muttered. "There are rules."
"Not many gentlemen around here at this moment, sir," said the sergeant.
"Damned right," whispered Maledict.
Polly, feeling drunk with relief and released tension, had to put her hand over her mouth to stop giggling.
"Oh, yeah, the rules. Prisoners of war and that," Jackram went on. "That means you even have to eat the same things as us, you poor devils. So you're not going to talk to me?"
"I am. Captain Horrence of the 1st Heavy Dragoons. I'll say nothing more."
And something about the way he said it elbowed Polly in the brain. He's lying. Jackram stared at him blankly for a moment and then said,
"Well now, it looks like what we have here is an embuggerance, which, my lads of the cheesemongers, is defined as an obstruction in the way of progress. I propose to deal with it in this wise."
He let go of the man's jacket, and the captain fell back. Sergeant Jackram removed his hat. Then he removed his jacket, too, revealing a stained shirt and bright red suspenders. He was still almost spherical. From his neck, folds of skin lapped their way down to the tropical regions. The belt must have been there just to conform to regulations, Polly thought. He reached up and undid a piece of string from around his neck. It was looped through a hole in a tarnished coin.
"Corporal Scallet," he said.
"Yes, Sarge," said Scallet, saluting. "You will note I am divesting myself of my insignia, and am handing you my official shilling, which means, since last time I signed up it was for 12 years and that was 16 years ago, I am now fully and legally a damn civilian."
"Yes, Mr. Jackram," said Scallop cheerfully.
Among the prisoners, heads jerked up at the sound of the name.
"And that being the case, and since you, Captain, are invading our country by night, under cover of darkness, and I am a humble civilian, I think there's no rule to stop me beating 7 kinds of crap out of you until you tell me why you came here and when the rest of your mates are going to arrive. And that may take me some time, sir, because up until now I've only ever discovered 5 types of crap."
He rolled up his sleeves, hauled up the captain again, and drew back a fist.
"We just had to take the recruits into custody," said a voice. "We weren't going to hurt them. Now put him down, Jackram, damn you. He's still seeing stars."
It was the sergeant from the inn. Polly looked at the other prisoners. Even with Carborundum and Maledict watching them, and Tonka glaring at them, there was a definite sense that the first blow landed on the captain was going to start a riot. And Polly thought, they are very protective, aren't they? Jackram must have picked it up too.
"Ah, now we are talking," he said, lowering the captain gently but still holding his coat. Your men speak up for you well, Captain.
That's because we're not slaves, you bloody beet-eater,
growled one of the troopers.
Slaves? All my lads joined up of their own free will, turnip-head.
Maybe they thought they did, said the sergeant. You just lied to them. Lied to them for years. They're all going to die because of your stupid lies. Lies and your raddled, rotting, lying old whore of a duchess.
Private Goom, as you were, that is an order. As you were, I said. Private Maledict, take that sword off of Private Goom. That is another order. Sergeant, order your men to ease back slowly. Slowly. Do it now. Upon my oath, I am not a violent man, but any man who disobeys me, by God, that man is looking at a broken rib.
Jackram screamed all that in one long explosion of sound without taking his eyes off the captain. Reaction, order, and breathless stillness had taken just a few seconds. Polly stared at the sudden tableau as her muscles untensed. The Slovenian troopers were settling back. Carborundum's raised club began to lower itself gently. Little Wazza was held off the ground by Maledict, who'd wrenched a sword from her hand. Possibly only a vampire could have moved faster than Wazza as she'd charged the prisoners.
"Custody," said Jackram in a quiet voice. "That's a funny word. Look at my little lads, will you? Not a whisker between them yet, save for the troll, and lichen don't count. Still wet behind the ears they are. What's dangerous about a harmless bunch of farm boys that'd concern a fine bunch of horse wallopers like yourselves?"
"Can someone please come and put their finger on this knot?" said Igor from his makeshift operating table. "I've just about done."
"Harmless?" said the sergeant, staring at the struggling Wazza. "They're a bunch of bloody madmen." "I want to speak to your officer, damn you," said the captain, who looked a little less unfocused now. "You do have an officer, don't you?"
"Yeah, we've got one somewhere, as I recall," said Jackram. "Perks, go and fetch the Rupert, will you? Best if you take that dress off first, too. You never know with Rupert's."
He carefully lowered the captain onto a bench and straightened up.
"Carborundum, Maledict, chop something off any prisoner who moves and any man who tries to attack a prisoner," he said. "Now then, oh yes. 3 parts, Scarlet. I wish to enlist in your wonderful army, with its many opportunities for a young man willing to apply himself."
"Any previous soldiering?" said Scarlet, grinning.
40 years fighting every bleeder within 100 miles of Borogravia, Corporal.
Special scales?"
"Staying alive, Corporal, come what may."
"Then allow me to present you with 1 shilling and immediate acceleration to the rank of sergeant," said Scarlet, handing back the coat and the shilling. "Want to osculate the doxy?"
"Not at my time of life," said Jackram, putting on his jacket again.
"There," he said. "All smart, all neat, all legal. Go on, Perks, I gave you an order."
Blouse was snoring. His candle had burned down. A book was open on his blanket. Polly gently pulled it out from under his fingers. The title, almost invisible on the stained cover, was Tacticus, The Campaigns.
"Sir?"
she whispered. Blouse opened his eyes, saw her, and then turned and frantically scrabbled by the bed.
"Here they are, sir," said Polly, handing him his spectacles. "Ah, Perks, thank you," said the lieutenant, sitting up. "Midnight, is it?" "A bit after, sir."
"Oh, dear, then we must hurry. Quick, pass me my breeches. Have the men had a good night?"
"We were attacked by Slovenian troops, sir. 1st Heavy Dragoons. We took them prisoner, sir. No casualties, sir."
Because they didn't expect us to fight. They wanted to take us alive. And they walked in on Carborundum and Maledict and me. It had been hard, very hard to force herself to swing that cudgel. But once she had done it, it had felt easy. And then she'd felt embarrassed about being caught in a petticoat. Even though she had her breeches on underneath. She'd gone from boy to girl just by thinking it. And it had been so easy. She needed some time to consider this. She needed time to think about a lot of things. She suspected that time was going to be in short supply. Blouse was still sitting there with his breeches half on, staring at her.
"Run that past me again one more time, will you, Perks?" he said. "You have captured some of the enemy?" "Not just me, sir. I only got two of them," said Polly. "We all are piled in, sir."
"Heavy dragoons?"
"Yes, sir."
"That's the Prince's personal regiment. They've invaded?"
"I think it was more of a patrol, sir. 7 men."
"And none of you are hurt?"
"No, sir."
"Pass me my shirt." "Oh, blast."
It was then that Polly noticed the bandage around his right hand. It was red with blood. He saw her expression.
"A bit of a self-inflicted wound, Perks," he said nervously. "Brushing up on my sword drill after supper. Nothing serious, just a bit rusty, you know. Can't quite manage buttons. If you would be so good..."
Polly helped the lieutenant struggle into the rest of his clothes and threw his other possessions in a bag. It took a special kind of man, she reflected, to cut his sword hand with his own sword.
"I should pay my bill," the lieutenant muttered as they hurried down the darkened stairs.
"Can't, sir. Everyone's fled, sir."
"Perhaps I should leave them a note, do you think? I wouldn't like them to think that I'd done a runner without..."
"They've all gone, sir,"
said Polly, pushing him toward the front door. She stopped outside the barracks, straightened his coat and stared at his face.
"Did you wash last night, sir?"
There was no..."
Blouse began. The response was automatic. Even though she was 15 months younger, she'd mothered Paul for too long.
"Handkerchief?"
she demanded. And since some things get programmed into the brain at an early age, one was obediently produced.
"Spit,"
Polly commanded. Then she used the damp hanky to wipe a mark off Blouse's face, and realised, as she was doing it, that she was doing it. There was no going back. The only way out was ahead.
"All right," she said brusquely. "Have you got everything?"
"Yes, Perks."
"Have you been to the privy this morning?"
Her mouth went on while her brain cowered in fear of a court-martial. "I'm in shock," she thought, "and so's he. So you cling to what you know. And you can't stop."
No, Perks," said the lieutenant.
"Then you must go properly before we get in the boat, all right?"
"Yes, Perks."
"In you go, then. There's a good lieutenant."
She leaned against the wall and got her breath back in a few hurried gulps as Blouse stepped into the building, then slipped in after him.
"Officer present,"
Jackram barked. The squad, already lined up, stood to varying degrees of attention. The sergeant crashed to attention in front of Blouse, causing the young man to sway backward.
"Apprehended enemy scouting party, sir. Dangerous business all round, sir. In view of the emergency nature of the emergency, sir, and seeing as how you have no NCO, what with Corporal Strappy having scarpered, and seeing as how I'm an old soldier in good standing, you are allowed to conscript me as an auxiliary under Duchess's Regulations, Rule 796, Section 3A, Paragraph 2, sir. Thank you, sir."
"What?" said Blouse, staring around blearily, and becoming aware that in a world of sudden turmoil there was a big red coat that seemed to know what it was doing.
"Oh, yes, fine. Rule 796, you say? Absolutely. Well done. Carry on, Sergeant."
"Are you in command here?"
barked Horence, standing.
"Indeed I am, Captain," said Blouse.
Horence looked him up and down.
"You?"
he said, disdain oozing from the word.
"Indeed, sir,"
said Blouse, his eyes narrowing.
"Oh, well, we shall have to do what we can. I am Captain Horence, and that fat bastard,"
said Horence, pointing a threatening finger at Jackram,
"that bastard offered me violence, as a prisoner, in chains, and that boy,"
the captain added, spitting the word toward Polly,
"kicked me in the privates and almost clubbed me to death. I demand that you let us go."
Blouse turned to Polly.
"Did you kick Captain Horence in the privates parts?"
Yes, sir. At need, actually. And it's Perks, actually, sir, although I can see why you made the mistake."
"What was he doing at the time?"
Embracing me, sir."
Polly saw Blouse's eyebrows rise and plunged on.
"I was temporarily disguised as a girl, sir, in order to allay suspicion."
"And then you clubbed him?"
"Yes, sir. Once, sir."
"What in the world possessed you to stop at once?"
said Blouse.
"Sir?"
said Polly, as Horence gasped. Blouse turned with an almost seraphic look of pleasure on his face.
"And you, Sergeant," he went on, "did you in fact lay a hand on the captain?"
Jackram took a step forward and saluted smartly.
"Not as in fact per se and such, sir, no,"
he said, keeping his eyes fixed on a point some 12 feet high on the far wall. "I just considered, since he had invaded our country to capture our lad, sir, that it wouldn't hurt if he experienced temporary feelings of shock and awe, sir. On my oath, sir, I am not a violent man."
"Of course not, Sergeant," said Blouse.
And now, while he still smiled, the smile was edged with a kind of malevolent glee.
"For heaven's sake, you fool! You can't believe these ignorant yokels! They're the dregs of—"
Horrence began.
"I do believe them, indeed I do," said Blouse, shaking with nervous defiance. "I would believe their testimony against yours, sir, if they told me the sky was green, and it would appear that, untrained as they are, they have bested some of Slovenia's finest soldiers by wit and daring. I have every confidence that they have further surprises in store for us."
"Dropping your drawers would do it," whispered Maledict.
"Shut up!" hissed Polly, and then had to cram a fist into her mouth again.
"I know you, Captain Horrence," said Blouse, and just for a moment the captain looked worried. "I mean, I know your sort. I've had to put up with you all my life. Big, jovial bullies with your brains in your breeches. You dare to come riding into our country and think we're going to be frightened of you? You think you can appeal to me over the heads of my men? You demand, on the soil of my country?"
"Captain,"
murmured the cavalry sergeant, as Horrence stared open-mouthed at the lieutenant.
"They'll be here soon."
"Ah,"
said Horrence uncertainly. Then he seemed with some effort to regain his composure.
"Reinforcements are coming," he snapped. "Free us now, you idiot, and I might just put this down to native stupidity. Otherwise I shall see to it that things go very, very badly for you and your men."
7 cavalrymen were considered not enough to deal with farm boys, said Blouse. "You're sweating, Captain. You are worried. And yet you have reinforcements coming."
"Permission to speak, sir," barked Jackram, and went straight on to, "Cheesemongers, get bleeding armed again right now. Maledict, you give Private Goom his sword back and wish him luck. Carborundum, you grab a handful of them 12-foot pikes. The rest of—"
"There is these as well, Sarge," said Maledict. "Lots of them. I got them off our friends' saddles."
He held up what looked to Polly like a couple of large pistol crossbows, steely and sleek.
"Horse bows," said Jackram,
like a child opening a wonderful Hogswatch present.
"That's what you get for leading a honest and sober life, my lads. Dreadful little engines they are. Let's have 2 each."
"I don't want unnecessary violence, Sergeant," said Blouse.
"Right you are, sir," said the sergeant. "Carborundum, first man comes through that door running, I want him nailed to the pub wall."
He caught the lieutenant's eye and added, "But not too hard." And someone did knock at the door. Maledict levelled 2 bows at it. Carborundum lifted a couple of pikes in either hand. Polly raised her cudgel, a weapon she at least knew how to use. The other boys, and girls, raised whatever weapon 3-part Scallet had been able to procure. There was silence. Polly looked around. "Come in," she suggested.
"Yeah, right, that should do it," said Jackram, rolling his eyes.
The door was pushed open, and a small, dapper man stepped through carefully. In build, colouring, and hairstyle, he looked rather like Malap—
"A vampire?" said Polly softly.
"Oh, damn," said Maledict. The newcomer's clothing, however, was unusual. It was an old-fashioned evening dress coat, with the sleeves removed and many, many pockets sewn all over it. In front of him, slung around his neck, was a large black box. Against all common sense, he beamed at the sight of 12 weapons poised to deliver perforated death.
"Wonderful,"
he said, lifting up the box and unfolding 3 legs to form a tripod for it.
"But could the troll move a little to his left, please?"
"Huh?"
said Carborundum. The squad looked at one another.
"Yes, and if the sergeant would be so kind as to move into the centre more and raise those swords a little bit higher," the vampire went on. "Great. And you, sir, if you could give me a grr."
"Grr," said Blouse.
"Very good, really fierce now."
There was a blinding flash and a brief cry of, "Oh, shit!" followed by the tinkle of breaking glass. Where the vampire had been standing was a little cone of dust. Blinking, Polly watched it fountain up into a human shape that coalesced once more into the vampire.
"Oh, dear, I really thought the new filter would do it," he said. "Oh, well, we live and learn."
He gave them a bright smile and added,
"Now, which one of you is Captain Horrence, please?"
Half an hour had passed. Polly was still bewildered. The trouble was not that she didn't understand what was going on. The trouble was that before she could understand that, she had to understand a lot of other things. One of them was the concept of a newspaper. Blouse was looking proud and worried by turns, but nervous all the time. Polly watched him carefully, not least because he was talking to the man who had come in with the iconographer. He wore a big leather coat and jodhpurs, and spent most of his time writing things down in a notebook, with occasional puzzled glances at the squad. Finally, Maledict, who had good hearing, sauntered over to the recruits from his lounging spot by the wall.
"Okay," he said, lowering his voice. "It's all a bit complicated, but do any of you know about newspapers?"
"Yes, my second cousin Igor in Ankh-Morpork. Tell me about them," said Igor. "They're like a kind of government announcement."
Sort of. Except they are not written by the government. They are written by ordinary people who write things down," said Maledict.
"Like a diary?" said Tonka.
No.
Maledict tried to explain. The squad tried to understand. It still made no sense. It sounded to Polly like some kind of Punch and Judy show. Anyway, why would you trust anything written down? She certainly didn't trust Mothers of Borogravia, and that was from the government. And if you couldn't trust the government, who could you trust? Very nearly everyone, come to think of it.
"Mr. Derwood works for a newspaper in Ankh-Morpork," said Maledict. "He says we're losing. He says casualties are mounting and troops are deserting, and all the civilians are heading for the mountains."
Why should we believe him?"
Wazza demanded.
"Well, we've seen a lot of casualties and refugees, and Corporal Strappy hasn't been around since he heard he was going to the front," said Maledict. "Sorry, but it's true. We've all seen it."
"Yeah, but he's just some man from a foreign country. Why would the Duchess lie to us? I mean, why would she send us out just to die?" said Wazza. "She watches over us."
"Everyone says we're winning,"
said Tonka doubtfully, after that moment of embarrassment. Tears were running down Wazza's face.
"No, they don't," said Polly. "I don't think we are either."
"Does anyone think we are?" said Maledict.
Polly looked from face to face.
"Saying so, it's like treachery against the Duchess, isn't it?"
said Wazza.
"It's spreading alarm and despondency, isn't it?"
"Maybe we ought to be alarmed," said Maledict. "Do you know how he came to be here? He travels around writing things down about the war for his paper of news. He met those cavalry just up the road, in our country. And they told him they'd just heard that the very last recruits from Borogravia were here, and they were nothing but a wet little bunch of squeaking boys. They said they'd capture us for our own good, and he could get a picture of us for his paper. He could show everybody how dreadful things were, they said, because we were scraping the bottom of the barrel."
"Yeah, but we beat them, so that's foxed him," said Tonka, grinning nastily. "Nothing for him to write down now, eh?"
Not really. He says that this is even better."
"Better? Whose side is he on?"
"Bit of a puzzler, really. He comes from Ankh-Morpork, but he's not exactly on their side. Otto Hreek, who makes the pictures for him."
"The vampire? He crumbled to dust when the light flashed," said Polly. "And then he came back."
"Well, I was standing behind Carborundum at the time," said Maledict, "but I know the technique. He probably carries a thin glass vial of blood,
he sighed.
"There, no problem. A thin vial of what I said, which smashed on the ground and brought the dust back to life again. It's a great idea."
Maledict gave them a wan smile.
"I think he really cares a lot about what he does, you know. Anyway, he told me Mr. Derwood just tries to find out the truth. and then he writes it down and sells it to anyone who wants it.
And people let him do that, said Polly.
Apparently. Otto says he makes Commander Vimes livid with rage about once a week, but nothing ever happens.
Vimes, the butcher? Said Polly.
He's a duke, Otto says, but not like ours. Otto says he's never seen him butcher anybody. Otto's a black ribboner like me. He wouldn't lie to a fellow ribboner. And he says that picture he took is going on the clacks from the nearest tower tonight. It will be in the paper of news tomorrow, and they print a copy here.
How can you send a picture on the clacks? Said Polly. I know people who've seen them. It's just a lot of boxes on a tower that go clack, clack.
Ah, Otto explained that to me too, said Maledict. It's very ingenious.
How does it work, then?
Oh, I didn't understand what he said. It was all about numbers. But it certainly sounded very clever. Anyway, the word just told the Lou, the Rupert, that news about a bunch of boys beating up experienced soldiers would certainly make people sit up and take notice. The squad looked at one another sheepishly.
It was a bit of a fluke, and anyway we had carborundum, said Tonka. And I used trickery, said Polly. I mean, I couldn't do it twice.
So what? Said Maledict. We did it. The squad did it. Next time we'll do it differently.
Yeah, said Tonka.
And there was a shared moment of exhilaration in which they were capable of anything. It lasted all of a moment.
But it won't work, said Shifty. We've just been lucky. You know it won't work, Maledict. You all know it won't work, right?
Well, I'm not saying we could, you know, take on a regiment all at once, said Maledict. And the Lou Rupert might be a bit wet, but we could help make a difference. Old Jackram knows what he's doing.
"Upon my oath, I am not a violent man, whack!"
sniggered Tonka.
And there were a few, yes, giggles. They were giggles, Polly knew, from the squad.
"No, you're not," said Shufti flatly. "None of us are, right? Because we're girls."
There was a dead silence.
"Well, not Carborundum and Ozza, okay,"
Shufti went on, as if the silence was sucking unwilling words out of her.
"And I'm not sure about Maledict and Igor. But I know the rest of us are, right? I've got eyes, I've got ears, I've got a brain, right?"
In the silence, there was a slow rumble that preceded a pronouncement from Carborundum.
"If it any help," she said,
in a voice suddenly more sandy than gravelly,
"my real name's Jade."
Polly felt questing eyes boring into her. She was embarrassed, of course, but not for the obvious reason. It was for the other one, the little lesson that life sometimes rams home with a stick. You are not the only one watching the world. Other people are also people. While you watch them, they watch you. And they think about you while you think about them. The world isn't just about you. There was going to be no possibility of getting out of this. And, in a way, it was a relief.
"Polly,"
she said, almost in a whisper. She looked questioningly at Maledict, who smiled in a distinctly non-committal way.
"Is this the time?" he said.
"All right, you lot, what are you standing about for?" bawled Jackram, 6 inches from the back of Maledict's head.
No one saw him arrive there. He moved with an NCO's stealth, which sometimes mystifies even Igor's. Maledict's smile didn't change.
"Why, we're awaiting your orders, Sergeant,"
he said, turning around.
"Do you think you're clever, Maledict?"
Yes, Sarge, quite clever,"
the vampire conceded. There wasn't a lot of humour in Jackram's smile.
"Good. Glad to hear it. Don't want another stupid corporal. Yeah, I know you ain't even a proper private yet, but glory be, you're a corporal now, because I need one and you're the snappiest dresser. Get some stripes from three parts. The rest of you, this isn't a bleeding mother's meeting. We're leaving in 5 minutes. Move!"
"But the prisoners, Sarge?"
Polly began, still trying to digest the revelation.
"We're going to drag them over to the inn and leave them tied up in the nude and shackled together,"
said Jackram.
"Vicious little devil when he's roused, our Rupert, eh? And three parts is having their boots and horses. They won't be going too far for a while. Not in the nude."
"'Won't the writing man let them out?' said Tonka.
"'Don't care,' said Jackram. "'He could probably cut the ropes, but I'm dropping the shackle key in the privy, and that'll take a bit of fishing out.'
"'Whose side is he on, Sarge?' said Polly.
"'Dunno. I don't trust him. Ignore him. Don't talk to him. Never talk to people who writes things down. Military rule. Now, I know I just gave you lot an order, because I heard the bleeding echo. Get on with it. We are leaving.' "'Road to perdition, lad, promotion,' said Scallet to Maledict, swinging up with two stripes hanging from his hook. He grinned. "'That's 3 pence extra a day you're due now, only you won't get it because they ain't paying us. But, to look on the bright side, you won't get any stoppages, and they're a devil for stoppages. The way I see it, march backwards and your pockets'll overflow.'
The rain had stopped. Most of the squad were parading outside the barracks, where there was, now, a small covered wagon belonging to the writer of the paper of news. A large flag hung from a pole attached to it, but Polly couldn't make out the design by moonlight. Beside the wagon, Maledict was deep in conversation with Otto. The centre of attention, though, was the line of cavalry horses. One had been offered to Blouse, but he'd waved it away with a look of alarm, and muttering something about being loyal to his steed, which, to Polly's eye, looked like a self-propelled toast rack with a bad attitude. But he'd probably made the right decision at that, because they were big beasts, broad, battle-hardened and bright-eyed. Sitting astride one of them would have strained the crotch in Blouse's trousers, and an attempt at reining one of them in would have pulled his arms off at the shoulder. Now each horse had a pair of boots hanging from its saddle, except for the leading horse, a truly magnificent beast, upon which Corporal Scallet sat like an afterthought.
"'I'm no donkey-walloper, as you know, Three Parts,' said Jackram, as he finished lashing the crutches behind the saddle. "'But this is a hell of a good horse you've got here.' "'Damn right, Sarge. You could feed a platoon for a week off of it,' said the corporal. "'Sure you won't come with us,' Jackram added, standing back. "'I reckon you still must have one or two things left for the bastards to cut off, eh?' "'Thank you, Sarge. It's a kind offer,' said Three Parts. "'But fast horses are going to be at a real premium soon, and I'll be in on the ground floor, as you might say. This lot'll be worth 3 years' pay.' He turned in the saddle and nodded at the squad. "'Best of luck, lads,' he added cheerfully. "'You'll walk with death every day, but I've seen him, and he's been known to wink. And remember, fill your boots with soup.'
He urged the horses into a walk and disappeared with his trophies into the gloom. Jackram watched him go, shook his head, and turned to the recruits.
"'All right, ladies, what's funny, Private Holter?'
"'And nothing, Sarge. I just thought of something,' said Tonka, almost choking.
"'You ain't paid to think of things. You're paid to march. Do it!'
The squad marched away. The rain slackened to nothing, but the wind rose a little, rattling windows, blowing through the deserted houses, opening and shutting doors like someone looking for something they could have sworn they put down here only a moment ago. That was all that moved in plots, except for one candle flame down near the floor in the back room of the deserted barracks. The candle had been tilted so that it leaned against a cotton thread fastened between the legs of a stool. This meant that when the candle burned low enough, it would burn through the thread and fall all the way to the floor and into a ragged trail of straw that led to a pile of palliasses on which had been stood 2 ancient cans of lamp oil. It took about an hour, in the wet, dejected night, for this to happen, and then all the windows blew out. Tomorrow dawned on Borogravia like a great big fish. A pigeon rose over the forests, banked slightly, and headed straight for the valley of the Kneck. Even from here, the black stone bulk of the keep was visible, rising above the sea of trees. The pigeon sped on, one spark of purpose in the fresh new morning, and squawked as darkness dropped from the sky, gripping it in talons of steel. Buzzard and pigeon tumbled for a moment, and then the buzzard gained a little height and flapped onwards. The pigeon thought, "Ooh." But had it been more capable of coherent thought, and knew something about how birds of prey catch pigeons, and allowing for the fact that all pigeons who know how birds of prey catch are dead, and therefore capable of slightly less thought than a living pigeon, it might have wondered why it was being gripped so kindly. It was being held, not squeezed. As it was, all it could think was, "Ooh." The buzzard reached the valley and began to circle low over the keep. As it gyred, a tiny figure detached itself from the leather harness on its back and, with great care, inched itself around the body and down to the talons. It reached the imprisoned pigeon, knelt on it, and put its arms around the bird's neck. The buzzard skimmed low over a stone balcony, reared in the air, and let the pigeon go. Bird and tiny man rolled and bounced across the flagstone in a trail of feathers and lay still. Eventually, a voice from somewhere under the pigeon said, "Bugger!